Hello, everybody, and welcome. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. We are here for another week of Turning Towards Life. You're also welcome to be with us. And Lizzie, it's great to see you. And I'm very excited to talk about this source, which I know is also connected with our Turning Towards Life live season that we're in the middle of as well. So that's exciting. I'm sure you'll say some more about that. But mostly welcome to you. Welcome to all of you who are with us from wherever you are in the world. This is our 444th episode, and there's something lovely about the, you know, it's only every now and again that we get an episode with four numbers the same in it, Lizzie. So we've been doing this for a long time, and it's another one of those places to mark the turning of time and the longevity of this. And I'm really glad to dive in and begin.
Thanks, Justin. Welcome, everyone. So today we've got this wonderful source by the amazing Marion Woodman, and she has this little book. It's very little and very potent, and it's called Coming Home. I think it's Coming Home to Ourselves. It's downstairs. I can't find it right now. And it's such a beautiful, excellent book, and I've had it on the table for the last few days and keep flicking to things, and this was like, oh my gosh, we have to do this. So Marion Woodman says, both men and women suffer when power is exercised for its own sake by rule and authority-bound women and men. Power mongers usually win their own games. They are operating on home territory. To go beyond power and the structures that support it usually involves quietly stepping aside. We do not step aside to disengage, but to evolve creative alternatives to power struggles. We may not be able to do as much as we would like about the way things turn out on socio-political battlegrounds that often require well-coordinated strategies involving many people. However, we can certainly begin with ourselves. We do not have to react in kind. We can learn to choose how we want to respond. Who are your inner power mongers? What do they say? How do they keep the rules?
It's fabulous. Lizzie, thank you. So I'm going to read, and we will post the text of this in the show notes on the turningtowards.life website. You can get it in our weekly email, and we'll name the book there as well so people can find it. So by Marion Woodman, both men and women suffer when power is exercised for its own sake by rule and authority bound women and men. Power mongers usually win their own games. They are operating on home territory. To go beyond power and the structures that support it usually involves quietly stepping aside. We do not step aside to disengage, but to evolve creative alternatives to power struggles. We may not be able to do as much as we would like about the way things turn out on socio-political battlegrounds that often require well-coordinated strategies involving many people. However, we certainly can begin with ourselves. We do not have to react in kind. We can learn to choose how we want to respond. Who are your inner power mongers? Who are your inner power mongers? What do they say? How do they keep the rules?
Thanks, Justin. So, Justin, the line that got me when I read this was, to go beyond power and the structures that support it usually involves quietly stepping aside. And I felt that resonant in me as, it's funny, I think I have a narrative about myself that I'm kind of winging it. But my wingingness, I think, is this. It's a really weird connection that I haven't made before. But often I feel like I'm slightly to the side of the thing I should be doing or something. And I can see relationships in this way too. Like when somebody's being particularly controlling, or they have powers and they're using them for the sake of them, and it's because of some kind of egoic position that they have to hold themselves in or something. Somehow I feel like I have always been to the side of that. Like at school, I just thought, well, this is a chance to be cheeky. And I didn't do anything bad, but I didn't conform to the what I should be doing thing. And so I think it's quite a theme And power just is so interesting to me, like why people do what other people tell them to do. I don't know. I mean, my children don't do what I tell them to do, so I have to create magic so that we do things that need to happen. So just because I say so doesn't mean things happen. And therefore, what is power really? If I'm not so frightening that I can use my coercive power, then what do I have? I still have power. I just don't have that kind of thin power that creates fear and frightenedness in people. But I definitely have power, as each of us humans do. So if I don't want to be that person who is using power for the sake of power just because I can and because I can frighten people, and people do what I say because they're scared, rather than being motivated to do what's needed or whatever. If I don't use that kind of power, then what am I using? So then when Marianne talks about evolving creative alternatives to power struggles, then I'm like, ooh, that's really interesting. Because what is it that we're actually doing when we are enabling something to happen, but not because of fear and not because of coercion and not because of control?
I love this image of you stepping to the side, Lizzie, which of course I know is true. I've known you for long enough and well enough to know that that's the case. And it's what's interesting to me is I don't think that's not power. So where I would tweak, as I read Marianne's words, I want to hear the word power in different ways as I read, because if I think about power as our capacity to bring about the kind of world that we want. In other words, the way that life force flows through us into our intentions and into the kind of world we want to create. I think that there's enormous power there. And when she says at the end, we can learn to choose how we want to respond, I think that's a kind of power. So there's a distinction here between hierarchical, controlling power game, fear-based power that you're making, and other forms of being powerful, of being present and contributory to the world. And actually what really struck me in listening to you and then in looking back at Marianne's words is, she says, when power is exercised for its own sake by rule and authority bound women and men. And I thought, there are places that rules and authority really help us. I'm really glad there's a system of laws, for example, in our country, and that it is enforced. Sometimes well, sometimes badly, sometimes cruelly, sometimes, you know, but I'm really glad that there are consequences if somebody should cause harm to somebody I care about, or somebody should damage a building, or, you know, all of those kind of things. But the for whom and for what it is exercised really matters. So when we use power structures well in service, then they can be incredibly important in all kinds of institutional settings. But when they're used, when the very same structures are used, or hierarchies are used for the sake of the person who is exercising them, or because of fear, or just for the sake of the feeling of exercising power, the sort of egoic ways of using power, then they're so incredibly destructive. And the thing that's so interesting about it to me is, I think for many of us humans, when we are given that kind of power, we very quickly get very afraid. It's really easy to use the power that we've been given in ways that are basically self-protective. And so being in this question that you're bringing us about what is it to step aside. So very often what I'm taking from Marianne as I'm speaking and from listening to you is, the power structures and hierarchies are useful up to a point, and then they're not. And it depends what they're used for and how they're used. And when they're not, what do we do? What do we do? And the way I'm thinking about this, Lizzie, is then to be powerful in the world means being really attuned to who and what is around us. We're part of bigger systems all the time: family systems, societal systems, cultural systems, friendship systems. How can we act wisely in the midst of those, knowing that our power is really limited in so many ways, as Marianne says? I think the biggest question then is, who do we want to be? this point that she makes about a lot of the really, really big questions are beyond each of us. They can sometimes be addressed by people organizing well in large numbers. But the place that we really exercise the power that we have well is like right here with you, Lizzie, talking to you, is how do we conduct ourselves towards one another now? Like you said, so we don't try and overtly or subtly coerce one another, you know, try to use that kind of power in this kind of situation. It takes a lot of paying attention to get onto, which we're doing, I think.
Gosh, I'm so taken by this whole thing of when we get power, we get really afraid. And so then we use fearful things. I hadn't quite seen it that way, but I can feel it in myself. Like when I get given a responsibility or I'm just afraid, I know that the way I would use my power wouldn't be helpful unless I was onto it, as you're saying. And I'm with this question of how do we live and practice and intend so that we can see that we're afraid and we can address our fear and not act from it and act from somewhere less brittle and less hardened and less, as you said, self-protective. And this topic, Justin, of healthy power and how do we use our power that we do have healthily, and how do we help others as well see that it is possible to use our power in healthy ways. And you mentioned before, this is the topic we have for this season of Turning Towards Life Live, which we're in the midst of at the moment. And it's such an important thing for us to be able to be in it together with one another. And we come back to this time and time again, but for us to be able to say, oh my gosh, I just manipulated someone into doing something just because I wanted it or because it worked for me or something, but that we can be in safe enough spaces to reflect on what we're actually up to when we're, you know, we might be in positions of power. If we're a parent, we're in a position of power. If we're anyone's boss, if we have some kind of privilege, we're in a position of power, and we all have different privileges. And some of us have more than others. And so how are we actually using that, and for the sake of what are we acting? So this word intention and how it tells us for the sake of what we're doing something, for why we're doing something, and letting that inform the how and the content. So if we can look at this topic plainly and see that we're all part of something, we're all part of something where power has been held historically really unhealthily in hundreds of millions of ways. And so we're going to be doing this. We're going to be being unhealthy all over the shop. But how can we question ourselves, and how can we ask ourselves for the sake of what are we even doing anything, and be clear on that, so that then when we do find ourselves in positions of power and acting in certain ways that feel from fear, how do we come back home to ourselves and ask, well, what am I doing this for anyway? And who am I being in the world, just like you're saying? And what is it to enact? What is calling to be enacted in ways where I don't have any powerful moves to make other than from my own healthy, motivational enrolling? Sometimes feels to me anyway in parenting, like creative magic realms. So that things happen, but they don't happen because people are afraid. They happen because it's a creative act.
I love the way you were talking earlier about what it takes to be a parent, Lizzie. And I know that also being a parent, that attempt to have things happen through misuses of unhealthy power sometimes produce something in the short term, but never anything good in the long term, as far as I can tell. And the alternative, to pick up on this thread of creativity that you're talking about, is really a kind of storytelling. Like, it's sort of, how do we, and if I think about it as adults, not in a parent-child relationship, where there's obviously a kind of hierarchy there, in the sense that parents bear a kind of responsibility that children don't for the way a family goes, you know, for the safety of the family. There are differences in the roles that we play. If I just shift it to you and me, just adults together, it seems really clear to me that if I'm not going to try and manipulate you or coerce you, whether overtly or secretly, which is also one of the ways that many of us try to exercise power, is to secretly manipulate. Like, I won't look powerful, but I'm actually trying to be powerful behind the scenes.
Mm.
It's about narratives. It's about the stories we have, the shared stories we have, which help us to establish, do we care about the same things? Should we care about the same things? Can I talk with you in a way that has you care about things that I also care about? And then what do we do from there? So there's one way of exercising healthy power. And I also really caught on to, as you were talking, Lizzie, it seemed to me, something to do with dignity. Like, I think we know, if we pay attention, we can find out if the stance that we are taking is dignified and dignifies others. Very often, if we can feel it in our own bodies, we can feel it as we relate to another person. And that's where I think this question that Marion asks at the end, which is really about sort of inner phenomena in us, like the inner parts of us, is directing us into a question about how do I tell by looking at me how I'm exercising the power I have in the world? What can I, because there are ways to tell. And one of the things that I've been in inquiry about recently also, Lizzie, is when I do have power, particularly if I have hierarchical power, which comes with authority, and I get afraid, can I spot it? Can I shift it? And if I can't shift it with some kind of kind move, who do I have around me who can help me? Because I'm not sure that all of us can always easily deal with the consequences of our own powerfulness on our own. It really takes one another to help ourselves conduct ourselves with the dignity and the care that's required, to use just the power of being a human long before hierarchy comes. The power of being a human is actually very extraordinary. How do we use that well? I think it takes all of that.
I was just thinking as well, Justin, it's one power that we do have is to see things, to question things, and to see a system in terms of power is a particular kind of seeing. Like seeing a system for who has power, who doesn't have power, what kind of powers do people have, and knowing that that's a way of looking at a system. Sometimes it's like impossible to even know that that's at play. And then the seeing of it in some way is a step towards creative alternatives being an option. And I can't help thinking about money as well, money and power. And when I remember being in an ashram in India, and the person running the whole thing said, you know, it's quite something to run a whole organization with volunteers. Because you've got no strings to pull on, well, I won't pay you if you don't do that. They're there voluntarily, and we're all apparently into the same thing for the same reason. And that's a very different kind of power than where money is involved. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, yeah, what, you know, that's a whole different thing when nobody's in exchange that's monetary. What is the exchange? And if that's not right, nobody would do anything. So I think that's an incredible practice too, is for money to be removed and to see how well things happen and or how distorted things then are. Because in a way, if we remove that layer, you reveal everything. And I feel like just being able to see systems in terms of power with or without money, but knowing that money makes a whole other level of powerfulness possible and impossible, just seeing that seems to be really important. And even when we're within a system where the power structures are there and there's hierarchy and all that kind of thing, it's still possible to step aside and be creative. I don't have to do exactly what you tell me just because you're paying me money. That's, when it comes down to it, that's not what makes me do what I do. It doesn't have to be the thing that makes me do what I do. And systems are complex, and there's all kinds of ways that we can be inside of them. So I'm just appreciating that we do have the power to see, and we do have the power to question and to feel. And normally those questions and feelings are very ready to be here and to come forth if we ask ourselves what it's like to be in a system, what it feels like, how is our body responding? How are we feeling inside of it? What am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? All of that stuff. Anyway, I know that we're almost out of time, Justin, and this feels so rich. And I'm so glad that we're in Turning Towards Life Live, where we can keep bringing these sources and keep talking and bringing this to other people as well. Our next season opens in the summer sometime, I think, of 2026, Justin, and we'll be talking about that more. But just to say, we love to hear from everybody who gets in touch with us. Please email us hello@turningtowards.life. We, Justin and I, both get that email address and we reply and respond to everyone. It's wonderful to be here with you, Justin. Thank you for this powerful and potent conversation. And I look forward to seeing everybody at our Turning Towards Life Live this week, Justin, when we're continuing with this topic, and to coming next week, where you're going to bring us a wonderful new source as well, Justin. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.